Fear is inventive. Cancer is not contagious. Brain cells can regenerate. Silence is not merely the absence of sound. Anxiety is not equally apportioned between the sexes. Adaptation is a biological process by which organisms or species become better suited to their environments. Years after her diagnosis in 1975 of stage 4 breast cancer, Susan Sontag wrote, "I am gleaming with survivorship." According to many studies on happiness, including the most popular course ever taught at Yale and later taken online by 3 million people, individuals who exercise daily, do things for others, and take regular note of what they have to be grateful for are happier than those who don't. And I would add, people who are in close touch with others, which must mean that with all the ways we have to be in touch in the 21st century, happiness is on the rise and loneliness on the decline. Do kids who've grown up with computers, smartphones, and texting know what it means to be out of touch for days, sometimes weeks? Do they know a long-distance phone call used to be so expensive these calls were often special occasions? Do they know that people on vacation sent postcards, many, many postcards, to friends and loved ones because there was no other way to be in touch? Can they picture travelers sitting in cafes with a half dozen postcards writing out messages and then having to figure out how and where to get stamps, which was sometimes so difficult they came home with a batch of unsent postcards? Tiny messages, little kisses, see you soons, and wish you were here's. I can't think about all those postcards and letters without remembering how much loneliness there was in those days, so much distance between us, and no other way to measure it except in time, the time it takes for a postcard or letter to travel from point A to point B, the time that will elapse before X will see Y again, and measured in the phrase with words of one syllable, words of so few letters, "I miss you so much." My husband sometimes texts me from the bedroom, two rooms away from where I am in the living room. On the other side of the apartment, he reads, listens to music, and prepares his classes. "Nap," he sometimes texts, or "doing laundry tonight." Sometimes I text him, "Do you want a visitor?" When cell phones were firmly a feature of most lives, my sister said that it would have been wonderful to have had one in the late 1970s and early 80s, when she was living with an Italian man who often didn't talk much except to his friends late at night in their tiny apartment when she was trying to sleep. I could have walked down the street with him and called Suki, and it would have made such a difference. I would have been so much less lonely. When I found true love with the man who texts me from the bedroom, I replaced years of loneliness with fears that I added to the small collection of large fears I already had. Now at the top of the list is the fear that I will lose the true love because he will die or I will die. When my cell phone rings and I don't recognize the number, I'm afraid it's a stranger calling to tell me that my husband is in the hospital. He has had an accident or a heart attack and I have to get there right away. Or I'm already too late. Every night as I brush my teeth, I think we made it through another day without dying. It feels like an achievement because in an ordinary day of several phone calls from unfamiliar numbers, I come so close to losing him. I would miss you so much.